We'll call to order the Energy Utilities Technology and Communications Committee meeting for March 10th. We have an agenda of four bills today, and three of them are with the PUC. And we'll call on Senator Rick Olsen first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A1 amendment. I'd like to put this bill in the fashion I wish it to be in.
And that's in your packet. Senator Olsen offers the A1 amendment, which is an author's amendment. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Those were just some changes, actually going back to some original language on line 26 and 119, I believe it was. But and just a few other changes, but I have Mr. Haar from the PUC to kind of address the changes in the bill.
Mr. Haar.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Burl Haar. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Public Utilities Commission. Senate File 586 is a bill that would help the commission more effectively manage its workload. Currently, the commission must act on a rate case filing within 10 months of the filing of the rates, or otherwise the rates proposed by the utility will go into effect. When the commission gets receives multiple rate case filings, which is presently the situation that we're dealing with, on top of filings and other projects that we already have underway, this can pose a significant workload issue for the commission, and I might add for the Department of Commerce as well, especially in light of our relatively small staff sizes. Senate File 586 would extend the current 10-month deadline for a final rate determination in a general rate proceeding up to an additional 90 days in the case of exigent circumstances such as multiple rate case filings. It gives the commission basically discretion to more effectively manage its workload. And that's really what the changes in the amendment did. We worked with the utilities to try and develop some language to that would work for them, as also allow the commission the flexibility it needs to do its work. And we believe this will accomplish that.
Any questions or comments? Senator Olsen.
With that, Madam Chair, I would ask support for Senate File 586. And are we going to the floor? Or?
We are going to the floor, but you're smooth, not the consent calendar, right? It seems to me this took a bit of negotiating to get here.
It did.
Okay. On Senator Olsen's motion that Senate File 586 be recommended to pass and referred to the floor. Any comments? Discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Bill passes. Thank you. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, fellow committee members, have before you Senate File 573, and it also has an amendment that I would like to move to bring the bill in order.
That's the A090096 amendment.
Correct.
This is an author's amendment, so all those you all have a chance to look at it. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Dahl.
And again, this is another technical bill, just kind of updating it a little bit, so I'll let Mr. Haar explain what this bill, as amended, does.
Mr. Haar.
Madam Chair, Chair. Thank you, Senator. Members, this bill is largely a technical housekeeping type of bill. It does three things, essentially. The Section 1 updates language to allow the Commission to make recordings of its proceedings using audio electronic equipment. We've had the requirement in place for years. There's some outdated language referencing audio magnetic. We really don't use that kind of equipment anymore, so that language is updated to allow us to use electronic recording devices. The second section deals with, actually second and third sections deal with the cold weather rule. You'll recall that a couple of sessions ago there was legislation that basically took the cold weather rule, which had been a commission rule for many years, and put it into statute and made a number of revisions to those provisions. So the rule technically doesn't exist anymore. However, cold weather rule became sort of a term of art, and in order to avoid confusion, these are revisions that simply eliminate that phraseology and make sure that the reference is properly cited in the statute and there isn't confusion about the cold weather rule per se. It updates the statutes to reflect the proper statute citation. And then the amendment brings in another provision which would allow the commission, when it deems necessary, to make arrangements for court reporter services. Presently, we do not have court reporter services for each and every proceeding. The current situation is that if a party believes that it or feels that it wants to have a written transcript of a commission proceeding, they will make arrangements to do so for the court reporter services to be present, and we'll pay the cost of the transcript. The commission does get a copy of the transcript, but it's the party that makes the arrangements. There have been increasing instances where the commission believes it would be in everyone's, it would benefit all the parties to have court reporter services present, and would like the authority to be able to make arrangements to have that service provided so that there is a written transcript that the commission, its staff, and other parties can use. And this would give the commission authority to do that. It would also require the major proponents in the proceeding, the major parties in the proceeding, then to cover the costs of those services. So that's what the amended language does.
Any discussion? Senate Council is recommending that we remove on line 1.10 of the amendment the words thus required. Seems like unnecessary or superfluous language. Senator Dahl, would you care to make that amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
On Senator Dahl's amendment, any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Is there anybody here to speak against this bill? Okay, Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I move Senate File 573 as amended to...
Be recommended to pass and re-referred to the floor.
And re-referred to the floor.
On Senator Dahl's amendment, any discussion? I mean, a motion, rather. I'm sorry. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And Senator Dahl, you have the next bill also.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senate File 574, we also have an amendment. I'd like to move the A4 amendment.
I'm not sure we have that, do we? Does everybody have the A4 amendment?
Yep.
around it? Okay. This is an author's amendment. All those in favor of the motion to amend the bill with the A4 amendment, signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, committee members, this bill, let me just give a little history and Mr. Haar can fill in the blanks, but if the commission determined that a rate has been applied in a manner that would be inconsistent with statute by the public utilities, either inconsistent with a statute, a commission rule, or order, and resulted in the utility receiving revenues to which it was not entitled, basically the PUC had a couple of options. Ask the utilities to voluntarily take corrective actions, or they could maybe take the matter to the Attorney General to see if they could seek penalties. What we're trying to do in this particular bill is to put a little bit more teeth into the PUC's ability to maybe bring some retribution or to correct an injustice that might have occurred to a consumer. So I will ask Mr. Haar to explain the bill further.
Mr. Haar.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Senator, thank you. As Senator Dahl indicated, the bill is intended to give the commission the authority to order refunds when it has determined that there's been misapplication or a violation of statute or commission rule or order resulting in revenues going to utilities that they are not entitled to receive. As you all know, the commission is responsible for establishing reasonable rates for utility services, and without the ability to correct rates that are misapplied or shouldn't have been charged in the first place, we are limited in our ability to do that. This change would allow the commission to sort of complete that circle, I guess you could say. The provision here is very similar to authority that other state regulatory commissions have. Most other state commissions have some form of refund authority for circumstances like this. The bill does essentially four things, I guess. It authorizes the commission, after conducting a proceeding, to order a refund when it finds the circumstances warranted. It would not change any existing authority, such as penalties or other remedies. It would add language to reaffirm existing prohibitions against retroactively establishing rates that had already been deemed reasonable, or what we call in the trade retroactive rate making. And it would also place a 6-year statute of limitation on the refund authority. Once again, we worked diligently with the utilities, and the utilities worked diligently with us to come up with the amended language. There were some provisions in our initial draft relating to Chapter 237. We determined after closer scrutiny that we need to take a closer look at that. So we decided to remove those sections at this juncture, reassess that, and perhaps come back next session.
Okay. Senator John Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Haar, was there some things that are going on at this point that prompted this legislation?
Madam Chair, Senator,
Mr. Haar.
I can't say there have been widespread issues, but there certainly have been instances over several years. Really, the impetus for this stems from a court ruling several years ago in a natural gas case where the court made reference to or raised questions about the commission's ability to do refunds. And that's haunted us for years, and we probably should have taken action on this before now. It's become a little more of an issue in recent years, so that's what prompted us to bring this forward at this time.
Okay. And Madam Chair,
Senator Dahl.
So there isn't something that you'll be going on after, say this passes, that there's some issues that you're going to address right in the, you know, following that are ongoing? It's just something that happened in the past that you're trying to offset in the future that from possibly happening?
Mr. Dahl, or Mr. Haar, excuse me.
That's the intent here, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Haar, on lines 1.11 with the public utilities and telephone company on line 1.22 and the telecommunications carrier on line 2.8, it mentions in a manner approved by the commission. Several questions there. Has that manner been determined, and will that manner be different as far as all three of those sectors, as far as returning the refund to the subscribers?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, the sections 2 and 3 have been deleted with the amendment, so those are no longer that's fine. They're no longer part of it. As to section 1, the commission hasn't developed or written down exactly how that's going to happen. Normally, those sorts of decisions are made in the context of a particular proceeding, but there are safeguards built in to the language here, in that the commission now, with the amended language, would be required to have a separate proceeding on the refund part of the decision. And those details will be worked out in that proceeding.
Any further questions or comments? And Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, and I would just like to compliment Mr. Haar, and I believe it's Janet Gonzalez,
yes,
who have really worked diligently over the last month to work with the utility companies on this particular issue. I think we might have gone through with sections 2 and 3, but their time is precious, and we haven't had time to hash it out with the telephone companies and the telecommunications companies. But I think this is a needed piece of legislation, and again, I want to compliment Mr. Haar and his staff for really, really working hard to make sure that all the stakeholders were heard. And so with that, I would move Senate File 574 as amended.
And is there anybody here to speak against this bill? Okay, then on Senator Kevin Dahl's motion that Senate File 574 is amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the floor. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 298 is, we're going to switch gears and talk about cell phones. This is a consumer protection bill, and it's an idea that was brought to me by a constituent. And this is my second committee that I've appeared in. This bill did pass through the Commerce and Consumer Protection Committee, and my constituent did take half a day off from his job at as a high school teacher to come to the first committee, but he said he would be unable to come to all these committees with me to testify and tell his story. So I wish he could be here, but I've passed out his story and his testimony, which is just a page, and that's one of the handouts that you have. So I'd like to just explain what happened to him and why it prompted this bill. If you look at his testimony by Greg Martinson from St. Paul, he contacted me and told me that his son, who's in seventh grade, or was in seventh grade last year, had a cell phone as part of their family plan. And while he was at Valley Fair, apparently they think it was stolen. Anyway, they didn't realize the phone was stolen. And then they got their cell phone bill. And there were charges of, when they first saw the bill, it was $890. That was owed, and then by the time they called back the cell phone, the bill when it was mailed to them showed $890 in charges. When they received the bill, that's what it said. Then they called the company, and by that time the charges had gone up to $1,300, close to that. So they called the cell phone company and tried to work out an arrangement. They said that we're not responsible for these calls. The phone has been stolen. We weren't aware that it was stolen. And we don't – he asked if he could be excused from paying the bills. The company did look at the charges and acknowledged that they were not authorized charges. So there's no dispute about that. The calls were apparently made overseas to some foreign countries, and they were all made to these foreign countries, and it was clear that they were not made by his family or by his son. And so the issue was really whether the consumer would be liable for these charges once it was determined that they were not authorized charges. And my constituent was very frustrated. He ended up, after a number of efforts to negotiate with the company, got them to agree to reduce the charges, and I think he ended up paying around $300 ultimately for the long-distance calls that his son, the thief apparently made. And he said it reminded him of a credit card, a stolen credit card, because he said under Minnesota law, under commonly used laws, if someone steals your credit card and makes unauthorized charges, you're limited to $50 in liability. And so he asked, why couldn't we have a law like that that would protect consumers who own cell phones if their phone is stolen or lost and if the charges are indeed found to be unauthorized? And so that's what this bill does. And if you just look at the bill, it has three sections, but sections 1 and 2 relate to two different circumstances. The first one, subdivision 1, is the one I just described, where if you don't realize your phone's been stolen or lost until you get your bill and you see all these charges on there that you know aren't yours, this bill says that if you call and let the company know within 20 days of receiving your bill, your liability would be capped at $50. If the company agrees that the charges are not authorized. So if the company thinks you made the calls, or if you can't prove you didn't, you still have to pay, even under this bill. But this would just say that if there's an agreement that the charges are unauthorized, then your liability would be capped. And then subdivision 2 says that if you do find that your phone is lost or stolen and you report that, then you wouldn't be liable for charges made once you report it lost or stolen. And the companies that I've spoken with, as many cell phone company representatives as possible in the last couple of weeks about this, and they uniformly say that when someone calls and reports a phone lost or stolen, they do shut that service off right away and wouldn't charge you for those calls. But I think it's still important to be clear about this in law. And the first situation is the one where I think we have more ambiguity, and it's really important to establish some kind of consumer protection in law. Part of the reason that I think we need to do this is that it's more common than you would think. After my constituent contacted me and we introduced this bill, we introduced it a year ago, actually. We did a little research to see if there were other circumstances where this happened, and I've passed out a few examples. And there's just a few media stories and examples of other situations where consumers around the country have gotten into similar circumstances. And I can just go through some of the examples. We got an email from someone in Brooklyn Park who said that her daughter thought her phone was broken, so she didn't report it stolen or lost, found out later apparently it was stolen, and somebody used it to text message, and she had to pay $500 in charges. The next example is someone who was on vacation. She was out of the country, and she didn't have, she had her cell phone stolen, and as soon as she came back, she was off the grid in Ecuador. When she came back, she reported her phone stolen, and then she was billed over $1,000 in charges for calls made after the phone was stolen. She was credited for some of the charges, but still had to pay $735 in roaming charges. There's example after example. There's one that made the national news that was from California, where a woman had her phone stolen while on vacation. She was billed $26,000 for calls that were made to Central America, And the company only agreed to drop the charges after she contacted CBS News. So I think some of those examples I've passed out for you here. So it seems to me that it's a fairly common problem, and we need to put some protection in law for this to protect consumers. As a parent who has preteen children who are begging for phones, a lot of us have had this circumstance where we want to have our children, we want our children more and more to have a phone with them when they're out and about in sports, at friends' houses, doing various activities. It's a matter of safety and being able, when you're busy working parents, to be able to contact your children. I'm not putting my children on a phone plan for quite a while, but a lot of parents need to do that as their children become older, and it's the most economical approach for a family to share a plan, but unfortunately, these circumstances can happen, and it just doesn't seem fair to me that someone should have to pay for charges that everyone agrees they didn't make. And so let's see, what else did I want to mention about this? So the bill, it pretty much speaks for itself. A couple other points I want to make. I do have a letter from Attorney General Swanson indicating her office's support for this bill. And I wanted to mention one other issue that may come up in the testimony. There was some litigation about a cell phone law that was passed in Minnesota several years ago, and it went all the way up to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, and there's been a lot of decisions about this across the country about what can states regulate and not regulate when it comes to cell phone service. And so you may hear one of the companies, I don't know if they will argue that it's preempted by federal law, so I just want to mention that. I looked at the court decision that governs our part of the country, the Eighth Circuit decision, and it says very clearly that we as a state cannot regulate rates for cell phones. That's preempted by federal law. But it also says explicitly that Congress intended that we could, as states, regulate billing disputes and other consumer protection matters. And that's exactly what this is. So I think this is something that is really within the state's jurisdiction to regulate, to protect. It's a consumer protection law, and I think it's a small thing that we can do to make a difference for regular people that I think would be good for Minnesotans. Most of the companies that I talk to say, well, they already do this, and so I would suggest then there's not really any harm to putting it into law, just to be on the safe side. So, members, I'd be happy to take any questions. Mr. Fuller has proposed that I change the head note, and here he comes. And so he has an A4 amendment that I'm fine with that just changes it from lost or stolen to liability for unauthorized use of cell phones. And I think that's probably a good suggestion from our Senate counsel. So, Madam Chair, maybe I should offer that little technical amendment, the A4 amendment.
Okay, it's being passed out. Why don't you address that while it's being passed out?
As I said, it just changes the head note from the name of the law, from lost or stolen cell phones to unauthorized use, liability for unauthorized use of cell phones. So I think it's just a technical correction.
Okay.
That Mr. Fuller's recommending. So I would move that amendment.
Any discussion about the A4 amendment? I'm just going to wait till everybody's got a copy. On Senator Anderson's motion of the A4 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, the only other point I would make is that we did, in the effort to compromise in the Commerce Committee, we did amend the bill on page 1, line 11 of the bill. We changed the amount of time a consumer would have to report the unauthorized charges on their bill from 60 days to 20 days. So we moved that up quite a bit. To make it a little more palatable to the companies. So I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions on the bill, Senator Dahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't really have a question, but I wanted to add that if you do lose your cell phone, you could do it in Southwest Minneapolis. That's a really good place. Just a side story, if I might, for a minute. This past winter, in the evening, I left a job site, and I lost my phone. It fell out on the street or on the sidewalk and came back the next day, and it was sitting on a little pedestal right outside. Someone had found it in the snow and set it there, 48th and Lindale. So not everybody takes your cell phone if you lose it.
You know, Madam Chair,
Senator Anderson.
The fine people of Southwest.
Senator
Disson. Well, Minnesota Nice is alive and well. We had a story. I'm trying to remember. I sent out an email to my district and asked people to send in their cell phone stories. And we got one of my neighbors told me about something that happened just a couple weeks ago where she lost her cell phone, and it was in Minneapolis, right? Where was it that she lost it?
On the bus.
On the bus in downtown Minneapolis on her way to work at the Guthrie. And a fellow who lived at the homeless shelter, I think, found it and called her and had no way to get a message to her. Because, well, he didn't call her. He called, I forget what happened. He called her mom somehow, and she said she's on her way to work. And so he said, if she'll pay my cab fare, I'll bring the phone to her. And he did, and she did. And so that was another happy ending, which was really amazing. So, but I have to say that Mr. Martinson, my constituent, he works at Roseville High School, and he checked with their police liaison officer, who reported that 5 or 10 cell phone losses are reported per week at their high school. So it's true that teenagers probably lose them, or maybe they get stolen more often. I don't know. And I think it's just important to make sure that there's a way to, if you're going to be a responsible phone owner, that you have a way to be responsible and try to cap your responsibility for things that happen, unfortunately.
I'll just have a little story.
Senator Dibble.
One of our colleagues, I won't say who, because then I'd be ratting out her son, just left his cell phone in a cab. He's on his way to Spain and left his cell phone in a cab in New York. So
I left mine in a shuttle on my way to the Detroit airport.
And you never saw
just,
it again?
No.
Yeah.
Popped out of my purse. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Anderson, and perhaps we should hear from the industry, but is this legislation going to be consistent what is happening in some of the other states? I'm sure many other states, and perhaps you already went into that, but maybe I wasn't listening. Because I think there should be some consistency across the board for a standard policy within these companies and what's happening with them.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I don't know what other states have done in terms of laws in this area. I'm sure the companies can tell you that. I know that California has some kind of a consent order that they entered into on this point, or similar issues, where with one of the major companies that requires them to have some procedures in place for this situation. And I mean, this is one of those things where it's such a common problem around the country that I would expect that there's been action around the country, and that eventually, hopefully, that would lead to some kind of federal response so that there is a uniform law, which would make sense.
Senator Anderson, do you have any testifiers?
I don't, Madam Chair, and I apologize, my constituent isn't here, so it's me and him advocating for this bill.
Okay. There are some other speakers, though.
Yes.
Bob Bass, president of AT&T Minnesota.
I can move over. Do we find any other? Yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure. Yeah.
Mr. Bass.
Thank you, Chairman Predner Solon and members of the committee. I am Bob Bass. I'm the president of AT&T Minnesota, and I'm here today on behalf of the 2,300 employees of AT&T in Minnesota. And we appreciate the opportunity today to participate in the hearing and speak on Senate File 298. Respectfully, as I testified in Senate Consumer Protection, though, we applaud the efforts of Senator Anderson. She obviously cares a great deal about Minnesota and her constituents, especially those in District 66. And we applaud the efforts to work to provide protections for wireless consumers. However, I would respectfully submit from AT&T that this legislation is not necessary and that our current policies and practices provide ample protections for our customers. It's in our best interest to handle the issue of a lost or stolen cell phone or an unauthorized charge on a customer's bill to the best of the ability that we have to make it a positive experience for the customer. AT&T takes the issue of lost or stolen cell phones very seriously, as we do an unauthorized charge on the bill. Our policy is, in the event that a customer has their cell phone stolen or they lose it, we ask them to immediately notify us. And once they do that, they can contact us via phone, which some of you may say their phone was stolen. How do they contact us? Or they can contact us via the Internet. And once they do that, we immediately deactivate and suspend the service on that device. We also notify them that they are no longer liable for any charges, subsequent charges, on that device. We then ask them to look at their bill, the next bill they get, and look at it very carefully and look at the period of time in and around when their device was lost or stolen. And we want them to bring any charge that looks out of the norm to our attention. We want them to look at it very carefully because what we're going to do is we're going to look at that and we're going to reverse those charges. It's one of those situations where, again, losing your cell phone and the whole experience is not a positive experience, but we want to handle that so that the customer has the least amount of a bad experience from that. With respect to unauthorized charges, again, we hope that our customers check their bills every month. And again, if they find a charge that's on their bill that they think they didn't make, and we want them to look on there and look for those. It could be a text, a call, something they didn't make. We want them to notify us because we give them up to 100 days to dispute a charge on their bill. And again, if they aren't happy with the resolution and they can bring those to our attention, we look at them on a case-by-case basis and we make a determination. You know, we can look and we can tell what our normal calling patterns that our customers have. And we're more than happy to resolve these situations. Because whether it's a lost or stolen cell phone or an unauthorized charge, the customer really does have the advantage because we're in a hyper-competitive industry. And if we can't do the very best for our customers on every interaction they have with us, they can choose to go to somebody else. And one further point on the unauthorized charge, if the customer is not happy with the resolution they get from us, we offer arbitration. They can go through an arbitration process, and whatever the outcome of that, we feel that that provides one more piece of protection for our customers. As the bill was introduced and has since been amended down to 20 days, we still feel that that's entirely unreasonable to allow a customer up to 20 days to report that a device was lost or stolen. You can imagine a lot can happen in 20 days as far as unauthorized calls, the unauthorized texts, the things that people could do with a cell phone for 20 days. It really doesn't give the consumer any incentive to notify us of the loss or theft of their cell phone. And the fact that you could limit the liability to $50, we believe is going to invite criminal behavior. Because what you could have is a situation where a customer, you know, unfortunately could run up their bill or they purposely run their bill up, do all kinds of things, text, download a whole bunch of stuff, call all over the world, and then decide, you know, I think I'm just going to report my phone lost or stolen and I'm only on the hook for $50. We believe that that will invite criminal behavior, and we feel that the problem is it's going to increase the cost for all consumers. So honest Minnesotans who follow the rules, pay their bills, and do the right thing will ultimately bear the brunt of criminal behavior. And really, the policies and procedures that are common to AT&T, and obviously there's a gentleman from Verizon, they're standard throughout the industry. One of the things Senator Anderson had referenced some articles, and you have a series of articles in front of you. One is from 2005, which was 4 years ago. The one article from California from 2007 about the one lost or stolen cell phone. The policies for AT&T changed in October of 2007 following a consent decree that we had reached with the state of California in a situation, and now that has become our standard policy, and that's what I just described as far as customers not being liable for charges once they notify us. And that's been in place since that time. So the relevancy, I believe, of the articles that she's passed out, they might be a little dated from that perspective. In conclusion, as I said, we applaud the efforts of Senator Anderson. She obviously cares a great deal about her constituents. The good news is we do, too. We're in a hyper-competitive industry, and we have to do our very best on every customer experience that they have with us. So it's in our best interest to handle these situations favorably every time they occur. However, we respectfully feel that in the case of this bill that it's not needed because of those policies and practices, which we feel provide significant protections for our customers, whether it's from immediately deactivating and suspending a device to working to resolve disputed charges on a bill. And that's all I have today, and I thank you.
Bass, you mentioned that this bill might encourage fraud because people might be willing or might be inclined to call up and say they lost their phone. But isn't that something they could do now and it'd be treated the same way?
Sure, sure. But in this bill, they would be limited to a liability of $50, the way that we read it.
As opposed to?
Well, currently, we just ask them to call us up. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. They would just call us now, and that they could bring those, you know, they would say their phone is lost or stolen. And again, we're going to immediately deactivate it, and then we're going to look at the bill. In this case, it would have to be if, where we see the difference, though, in this case, is if you're putting a liability on there that they would only be liable for $50 of charges, we wouldn't be able to. In the case that we found those, we'd have difficulty in collecting on those.
Well, this bill requires that it be on that it be on authorized use of the cell phone. Do you know if every other company handles it the same way AT&T does?
Madam Chair, very closely. The policies and procedures mirror each other pretty closely.
So what would be the objection then to having this bill passed?
Well, the limiting of the liability to $50, Senator Anderson had mentioned the preemption issue. If you were to, for instance, if a bill is $700 and you're going to limit what we can collect to $50, in essence, she did mention that in Section 332 of USC 47 that was referenced in what she was talking about, that states do have the ability to regulate terms and conditions, but they do not have the ability to regulate rates or market entry. And in this case, you would be setting a rate element, which is why we feel that in this case that particular case would be preempted.
So, Mr. Bass, I'm understanding that in California you wouldn't even be able to collect the $50.
No, that's not true, Madam Chair. The consent decree in California, the AG's office in California used a wireline statute in a deputy AG in 2007 and tried to apply wireline unauthorized charge language to the wireless industry. And where instead of us fighting through months and months of back and forth with the AG's office, because we did have problems with our procedures at that time, we decided to agree to the consent decree, which is now our current policy and practice to deal with lost or stolen phones or unauthorized charges. And so it's in our current policy and procedure since that consent decree in 2008. The unfortunate thing that happened in this case, the deputy AG in California who was working on this case passed away right after AT&T signed the consent decree, and the AG in California didn't pursue any further cases. And we were the first case that went up. So the unfortunate thing on that part of it was that they never went any further, and we were the only ones who signed the consent decree in California. But with the change of handling the issue of lost or stolen cell phones or unauthorized charges has become the standard across the board pretty much for all of the industry, and you've got Mr. McDermott here from Verizon to speak specifically to theirs.
Okay. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bass, this might be a rhetorical question, but can I assume that all of your customer complaints are not settled favorably? And my more important question is, if they did go to arbitration, would the consumer be liable for the cost of arbitration or part of the cost?
No, not in Madam Chair, you to Senator Dahl. The way the policy is set up now is that we pick up the cost of arbitration.
Senator Dibble?
I'll pass for now, Madam Chair.
Okay. Okay, Mr. McDermott?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Mike McDermott. I'm the Executive Director for State Public Policy for Verizon Wireless. I'll keep my comments brief regarding the bill, but before I address our concerns, I'd like to update you on some positive changes that Verizon Wireless has brought to the Minnesota wireless marketplace. Over the last 12 months, we've acquired two wireless entities, Rural Cellular Corporation and Alltel Wireless. Integration should be completed by third quarter of the Alltel integration, and RCC is nearly completed as I speak. We hope to have Alltel done, as I said, by the end of third quarter. We are an undeniable economic engine in Minnesota. We've invested $86 million in 2008 alone to upgrade our network. We've spent over $500 million in the last 8 years combined to improve our network here in the state. And we spend an additional $500 million a year with Minnesota-based companies like 3M and Target and small businesses like KGP, a woman-owned enterprise based in Faribault. And Verizon Wireless now serves over 83 million customers nationally. We have a call center in Mankato that we acquired with Alltel, and we have a regional office in Plymouth. Regarding the bill, Madam Chair, while it is well-intended, as Mr. Bass had stated, we feel strongly that the bill is not necessary. To my knowledge, there are no states that have passed similar laws limiting liability for lost or stolen phones. In Subdivision 1 of the bill, by creating a dollar amount by which the carriers must limit the customer's exposure to fraudulent charges, violates Section 332C of the Federal Telecom Act. It's not the fraudulent charges that are at issue. It's the fact that the legislature is stipulating how much wireless carriers must charge customers under a specific circumstance, and that is where Section 332C of the Federal Act is violated. The author attempts to bridge fraudulent cell phone charges to credit card fraud laws, and they are just not compatible. Again, this bill is not necessary. Verizon Wireless has put in place several stopgap measures that put usage controls on their children's usage of their cell phones in the parents' hands. If the child is prone to losing the phone, the parents can dial up or down the number of minutes that can be used during a billing cycle, and a parent can set a schedule on when the phone can be used, set parameters on who the phone can call, and what number the phone can dial and receive. In addition, we have a very liberal policy that encourages customers to contact us immediately when they are aware that their phone has been lost or stolen. This proposal will incentivize bad behavior in which a customer merely has to notify the carrier that the phone was lost or stolen, and the carrier would have to hold the customer to a $50 cap, even though they used their phone to rack up large bills. In the end, this proposal will raise the cost of service and remove any good faith relationship between the carrier and the customer. I would like to read verbatim what our contract reads regarding this issue. It states, "If your wireless phone is lost or stolen, it is very important that you notify us immediately for your own protection so that we can suspend your service to prevent further usage. If your bill shows charges to your phone after the loss but before you reported it and you want a credit for these charges, we will investigate your account activity. You do not have to pay the charges you dispute while they're being investigated to determine whether the charges resulted from usage by someone not authorized to use the phone. Further, if we haven't given you a courtesy suspension of recurring monthly fees within the prior year, we'll give you one for 30 days or until you replace or recover your wireless phone, whichever comes first. You may need to provide further information regarding the theft or loss if we ask for it. I'd like to add that before I wrap that with the Attorney General here in Minnesota and the Better Business Bureau and the FCC and other avenues for which a customer can escalate this problem, we see very, very little of this issue. I would say over the last couple of years, the issue of lost or stolen phone credits is less than 10. Over the past several years, we encourage people to let us know if they have this problem, and we have, as I said, a very liberal policy. And while I wrap, the intent of this bill is addressed through the sheer nature of the competitive marketplace. We fear that this bill, as written, would be preempted by federal law dealing with the regulation of wireless service and rates at the state level. And I'm available for questions, Madam Chair.
So, thank Mr. you. McDermott, if we were to remove that in excess of $50 from the bill, would we then be in compliance with federal law?
Madam Chair, if the bill has no reference to what the carriers have to charge, I would believe that the bill would then be in compliance. Madam Chair, may I?
Yes, Mr. McDermott.
Mr. Bass reminded me a moment ago that the industry, myself included, Mr. Bass and others within the wireless industry, have offered Senator Anderson some language that we believe would accomplish what she's trying to do with this bill and meet the issue with respects to the preemption. And that would limit the exposure that the customer would not be liable to any charges after they notified the carrier that the phone was lost or stolen.
Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question. If you took out the $50, wouldn't it make it easier for people to claim this maybe dishonestly, pass the cell phone to each other, because then there wouldn't... You'd be liable for up to zero? I don't know.
Okay, Mr. McDermott.
Madam Chair, without, if it's merely just removing the $50, I think Representative Senator Vanderveer raises a good point that one could game the system to limit their exposure. We have the mechanism to go back so far to look and see if a call pattern existed prior to the point that the phone was lost or stolen. As I said, without seeing specific language or hearing the language, I wouldn't be able to comment whether that would meet the preemption concerns that we have. But I do believe that limiting it to $50 or setting the price would be where we would have the problem. Mr. Bass may have comments additionally, but.
Okay. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm just failing to see what the concern is here. It's already things that you guys are already doing. And, you know, in fact, now you can say that there'd be a $50 charge, you know, for those minutes, whereas now you're saying there's zero. You have the technology to go back and see what kind of call patterns there were. I can think of an instance where I misplaced my phone, and it was actually in my vehicle, but I couldn't get to it. It was in between the seat, and finally was able to ring it and hear the buzz in the car. But, you know, I before I got to that point, I could have called in. I guess I couldn't find it. Call you to discontinue the service. I never found it. And so maybe you need a few days to determine whether you was stolen or maybe just misplaced, fell behind something, and you found it. To have those couple of days seems to make sense But right now, as far as encouraging more criminality, we already have criminal activity going on when someone steals or takes a phone and uses it in an unauthorized way. But the onus now becomes on the consumer to have to prove that, which that's fine. But also, you know, if they can't prove it, now all those charges are on them. And I just heard Verizon say, well, they spend $500 million a year just in this state alone on business stuff. I mean, I don't think any one of your customers generally is in that position to just give, you know, use $500 million for whatever purpose to upgrade their facilities or, you know, do special incentives to businesses. And you acknowledge it's only about a few cases. It's a very limited issue at this point. I'm failing to see why this bill would create more problems for you. I just think it's in line with some most of your regulations at this point already, and actually adds $50 onto it. Other than the federal issue, I see that it actually works with for you guys.
Mr. Bass.
Madam Chair, through you to Senator Dahl. I think the issue is that when you cap it at $50, because there could be situations where, you know, I use my cell phone a lot, and I use my personal cell phone that isn't something that, you know, the company pays for. I only have my business cell phone that's paid for. And I run up a lot of charges, do a lot of things on my personal cell phone. So I could have a bill that runs considerably higher than $50, and there could be some gray area. And I think the fact that you're capping what we could collect at $50 is the issue. Now, the language that we offered up to Senator Anderson removed all of that. What it basically said is, if you looked in subdivision 2, following the word stolen, we said, I don't think I have it in front of me, but basically the customer is no longer liable for any incremental charges that occur after the fact that they reported it lost or stolen. And then we added a piece at the end, because remarkably, even though phones get lost or stolen, people will call us up and say, my phone was lost or stolen, but don't shut it off. And we think we at least have to have some sort of middle ground there, that if somebody doesn't want to shut off, that we've got to be able to cap it somehow. So that's why that last sentence that was in the language that we offered up to her. But it's capping what we could possibly get, which is gets into the area where it could become a rate element of our business that a state would be attempting to have jurisdiction over a rate element. And that's clearly not allowed.
Senator Romo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you please explain to me why this is not compatible with losing or having a credit card stolen? I'm not quite following your logic on that.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. McDermott.
Thank you. Lost or stolen credit cards often take several billing cycles for charges to show up on a credit card. They're not as immediate as your cell phone charges. They're very, except at the end of a billing cycle, very few charges are carried over month to month like charges that could be applied to a credit card, a lost or stolen credit card.
Senator Romo?
I don't understand that.
Maybe Mr. Bass can crystallize it for you.
Well, Madam Chair, through you to Senator Rummel. One additional thing: when a credit card is lost or stolen, at each transaction along the way, a retailer has the opportunity to verify the identity of the person that's using that credit card. And the way it works for retailers who have agreements with any of the major credit cards is, if someone, if they allow somebody to use a stolen credit card, generally that credit card company is going to go back to that retailer and ask for the money back for that fact that they failed to verify the authenticity of the person who made that charge. In our case, somebody had mentioned before, why can't you guys just verify where each call is coming from? And I think if we have anybody from the ACLU or the Freedom Foundation or some of these other groups, they would probably take issue if we were trying to monitor phone calls to guarantee their authenticity.
Okay. A clarification on your question, says Senator Rummel?
Yes, Madam Chair. When my credit card bill comes in and I see something that looks like it's not mine, I can call, and that's what would trigger the credit card company to check that out. So when I get my cell phone bill and I see something that's irregular, can I call you? And so what's the difference? I don't understand.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Bass.
We give you up to 100 days to contact us, and we'll go through and look at it, and we'll just, if we look at it and it's clearly not something that a call that you made or charges that are due to your use of that device, we just credit it and take it off your bill.
So then why is this bill onerous?
Senator Romo. Mr. Bass.
Madam Chair, through you to Senator Rummel. It's the fact that it caps the liability. And I think the language that we provided with Senator Anderson was an attempt, and we appreciate the opportunity that she gave us. But we went through and took what we do today and offered up an amendment which changes Subdivision 2 of this bill and Subdivision 1. And I don't know if you...
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson wants to respond.
Well, Madam Chair, I wanted to make a couple of comments in response, so I don't know if you want me to wait till they're done. But on the language, and I did receive some language yesterday that I think it's similar to what I have in Subdivision 2 with some changes that relates to what happens once you report it lost or stolen. But it doesn't deal with the problem if that you don't know about the charges until you get your bill, which is what my constituent's problem was. So it doesn't respond to that issue. And I don't know if you have copies to pass around. If that's it's similar to Subdivision 2. I'm not quite sure. It just has some different wording. I'm not quite sure. I haven't had really. Was in meetings all night last night, so I haven't had time to really. We haven't really had time to talk about it. But I'm not sure if it doesn't really get to the heart of the issue that my constituent brought to me. Madam Chair, I wanted to respond to another issue. There's been talk about fraud and encouraging theft, and I think we need to be really clear about that, because I think that the companies really have a lot of ability to determine whether charges are unauthorized or not. It's their call under law and under their policies. And the policies that I reviewed, I tried to read a number of them, at least glance at them. What I saw was that they say that, some of them at least say, and you can correct me, I don't want to quote you wrongly for your companies, but they say that for the most part, there's a presumption that the calls were authorized if they were made from your phone. And so it's up to the companies they do the investigation, and they make the determination whether the calls were authorized or not. And this bill only deals with a situation where everyone agrees they're not authorized charges. So if the company can't verify that these, you know, if they think that there was theft involved, if they think there was fraud involved, it's up to them to determine the calls were not authorized, and then they wouldn't be covered by this law at all. It's only where they agree that the charges are unauthorized, and that's usually because it's so obvious that it's made to some country that you've never been to and don't know anyone who lives there, for example. So that's the circumstances that I heard about, where that's happened a number of times, and people were still unable to get those charges dropped.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And from what I'm hearing about the $50, so you would prefer it be something like $250 for unauthorized. I mean, that doesn't sound quite right, that you'd actually like to get more of the consumer's money for unauthorized calls. If what Senator Anderson is saying is true, it only applies to unauthorized calls.
Mr. McDermott.
Madam Chair, Senator, the issue isn't the dollar amount. It's the legislature's attempt to tell the carriers what they can charge under that situation, any situation.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I mean, I think the question here is about the fear of preemption. That's my understanding, that they don't want us to mention any dollar amounts. And I would think the remedy for that would be to say consumers aren't liable for unauthorized charges. I'm not sure that would make you any happier. But it would take the dollar amount out. And frankly, you know, go home and get your bill from your phone that was left in the car and find that between the time that you lost it, left it in the car, went home, called your company that there were $1,000 worth of charges, you probably won't want to pay $50 for that privilege. So we could do that, but I don't really think that companies would prefer having it be zero.
I actually called the company, and there was going to be a charge to discontinue services, so I chanced flying home and going immediately to the store to purchase another phone so I could have the service transferred to that phone so I wouldn't incur a second charge because there was a charge for that too.
Well, generally, Madam Chair, you still have your same contract, even if you still have right. to abide by the terms of the contract, even if your phone is lost or stolen.
And then, Madam Chair?
Yes. Yes.
Did they add 2 years to your contract then for changing phones?
Did they would have, except I bought a phone on my own and connected it.
Oh, well,
the very cheapest phone I could find.
Well, I've had 2 years added to my contract even when I've done that.
Yes. Mr. McDermott.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm glad that question came up. I actually verified this with our regulatory counsel this afternoon. Verizon Wireless, and I believe it's also Mr. Bass can confirm, it's Verizon Wireless's position that we do not charge to reactivate a phone once it was lost or stolen. If you deactivate it because it was lost or stolen and you reactivate a new phone, there's no activation charge associated with Verizon Wireless's service.
But that's not true for all companies.
And that's why I'll avoid the commercial. I'm sorry.
Mr. Bass.
The only thing I was going to add, Madam Chair, is in your particular case, I think what we've tried to say in at least from AT&T's perspective in our policies and procedures is that it isn't in our best interest to quibble at all over, gray area on the charges. We're not going to spend, $60 loaded labor rates to try and quibble over pieces of. And really, if we don't make you happy from your experience, you can take your phone number and go to another carrier tomorrow or this afternoon. And I hope in your case, if you had a bad experience with whatever carrier, you chose to go to somebody else.
You can if you're not locked into a contract.
Well, Madam Chair, in that case, it's become much easier. There are more ways for people today are avoiding more longer-term contracts. We've reduced the early termination fees. It's changed considerably. The consumer is definitely driving the bus in our industry because of the competitiveness. And it's just we feel that these policies and procedures work pretty well right now.
Okay. Any further questions or comments of the testifiers? Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. We keep talking. We're not done yet.
Thanks.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, I think that's been a pretty good discussion. I don't know if you want to hear my response to some of the other comments that were made, just very briefly. On the preemption issue, I just want to read to you from the court case, because it says, the Eighth Circuit says, it talks about the legislative history of the Federal Communications Act. And it says, it has like an excerpt from what the House Budget Committee said. And they said, by terms and conditions, the House Budget Committee, intends to include such matters. Terms and conditions are what are permitted to be regulated by states. The committee intends to include such matters as customer billing information and practices and billing disputes and other consumer protection matters. So I understand the companies are, they don't want to go in the gray area, but I don't really think this is a gray area. And I think on the issue of unauthorized charges, again, I think that the way the policies and the law are set up, that really the control for that decision remains with the companies. And so I don't think that this is going to cause them problems. I honestly don't. But it will provide some certainty for consumers if they get in this situation. And I think we can all understand how this could happen to any one of us pretty easily. Madam Chair, I would...
Senator Anderson, it was a letter of support from the Attorney General's office?
Yes.
And they've obviously been looking at issues like this for some time.
Yes, and I did...
Have they indicated in any way that they felt that this was beyond the oversight of the state?
Well, in fact, that's what they were studying for a period of time. When I first asked them to look at the bill and review it, they said that they had to look at the preemption issue before they could give me an opinion, and that was delivered to me about 5 minutes before the first committee hearing on the bill, and they said that they did study that issue and felt comfortable that this bill was not preempted by state, by federal law.
Okay.
Sorry, I didn't bring someone from the office here to.
Yeah, Senator Vanderveer.
Madam Chair, on the preemptive part, it was the Attorney General that insisted on the opt-in go into that bill, and that's where the regulation was, because it was requiring that the service be provided at the old price. So I think, I'm not sure how much I'd rely on their opinion, but this bill doesn't look like it does that anyway. So.
Okay. Senator Rosa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would assume this bill is going to
judiciary.
Judiciary. Is it going to have a stop in business, industry, and jobs, I would assume?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I don't really think it needs to go there, but I have to talk about that with that committee. But I know it has to go to judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just a little cautious and concerned about the industry as a whole, that we are setting another precedent for this industry, and we're making Minnesota again another island in this issue. And they're going to have, and I'm sure they have some different policies for every state or market that they're in. But I'm hoping that hopefully the conversation can continue with the industry, Senator Anderson, and bring them to a comfort level, because I know for some of these carriers, they're fairly new into the state, and their need to expand and grow in the state is something that we want to encourage. And I just am offering that caution that, again, this is a business, a thriving, growing business, and we want to make sure that we aren't hampering their intent to grow in the state or their ability to do business and making us singled out any differently than how they handle other states with the same issues.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Anderson, the issue with the, I assume you're going to handle this in judiciary, but the federal issue, but the other issue with the language, did you get a chance to look at that, the alternative language they offered? And
well, Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, as I mentioned, I did get this yesterday, and I can tell you briefly it says basically unauthorized use. I'll just read it. It's a sentence. It would take away the first subdivision, the provision about responding after you get a bill. It would instead say, it would delete subdivision 1 and substitute for subdivision 2. A person is not liable for any subsequent incremental charges incurred by utilizing the wireless device after receipt by the wireless service provider of notice that the wireless device has been lost or stolen and the person has agreed to suspend the wireless device. To me, that says kind of what it already says, but I'm not quite sure what the difference is between what my subdivision 2 and this is, and that's where we really haven't had an opportunity to talk. And I've met with as many of the lobbyists as I could before the first hearing, and invited them to give me alternatives, and I know they've been trying to come up with some, and we haven't had a chance to sit down and talk this over. So I'm not quite sure if this has any different meaning than what I have in my subdivision 2. It looks pretty similar, but it doesn't say anything about unauthorized charges. So
Senator Anderson, would you have a chance to meet with them before it goes to judiciary?
Oh, absolutely, Madam Chair. I intend to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any further questions? And Senator Anderson?
Well, Madam Chair, then I would move that Senate File 298 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
On Senator Anderson's motion, any questions or comments? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee members.
That does bring us to the end of our agenda today. We will meet next on Thursday.
Thursday.
Okay. Okay. And on Thursday, we will be doing an overview on weatherization and some bills that will be moving to finance. And we will meet in room 112 on Thursday. They will be using this room for another committee. So room 112 on Thursday. Meeting adjourned.